Welcome to The Liberated Life, the podcast for women who are done pretending that they have it all figured out and are ready to live with more freedom, clarity, and courage. I'm Lucy Maeve, your guide on a journey through the unspoken parts of healing, desire, and self-discovery. This is a place to be seen, heard, and held, where we embrace all the complexities and contradictions of being fully alive. No masks, no shortcuts, just the real work and real liberation. Hello, my darlings. It is such a joy to be back here with you. And I'm really, really, really excited to share this episode with you. When I was thinking about who I could interview on this podcast, Laura was actually one of the first people that popped into my mind. Laura is actually a client of mine about 18 months ago. And we had such a beautiful journey working together and unlocked so much for her. And also, I always find this with amazing clients that they inadvertently unlock so much for me. So it was such a joy to have her on the podcast. Laura is a transformational coach, co-pilot and self-confessed people whisperer. And after a decade of leading multi-billion pound projects in financial services, outwardly thriving but inwardly questioning everything, she discovered NLP and found a new path. Today, she co-runs Infusion Group, a small but mighty business growth consultancy based in St. Albans, and is the founder of Messy Wisdom, where she shows high-achieving women in the messy middle of life how to shift from disconnected to alive. She's delivered thousands of coaching and leadership sessions across sectors, helping business leaders and brilliant women alike unlock clarity, performance, and purpose. A certified coach, NLP master practitioner, and GCologist, Laura's work has helped clients secure promotions, scale businesses, rebuild self-trust, and rewrite the second half of life on their terms. It was the biggest honor to have her. I could have spent like days talking to her. And I really hope that you guys enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Sending you all so much love, and I'll speak with you soon. Okay. I'm so excited about this conversation today. Honestly, it's such a joy to have you with me. And just like looking at your smiley face, I was thinking about like my initial question to ask you. And
I love that.
Like, I can't help but look at you and smile. And you have always struck me as someone that has like such like shiny, playful energy, but also so much depth. And I wonder, just as an initial question, what is bringing you the most liberation and aliveness in your life at the moment?
Oh, what a gorgeous question to start with. I feel really grateful right now. I am particularly grateful, not going to lie, the weather is helping. The weather in the UK right now, we have summer on its way, even though it feels a little intermittent, but sunshiny, bright, fresh mornings are just the most fantastic way to start the day. And I'm getting out every morning. I'm making sure I get my vitamin D, I get my fresh air, and it's really changed the game for me instead of kind of doing stuff inside. So that is bringing a lot of joy. And I also have, for the rest of the day, some fantastic conversations with clients that I'm so looking forward to. So I am feeling very smiley inside and out, instead of just presenting a smile, Lucy, which you might have been familiar with from when we started working together.
Honestly, and I feel you about the weather. I feel like I've been so lucky since I got back from Cape Town, and I've been like lulled into this idea that the weather in the UK is always amazing. So I got back in March and it's just been like glorious. I'm like, England's always like this, right? Like,
why did I go? Why did I even change this? Yeah.
And that's a perfect little, I can't remember how to say the word. Is it Sedgway, Segway? God knows. One of them's a little scooter thing. One of them is a link. The one that is a link.
Yes.
If we go back for a moment. So when we first started working together, which was, I can't even figure out time, like a year ago, year and a half ago.
It was.
Maybe?
It was. And I only know because I look back on my notes. It was March last year, March 2024.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And when we started working together, you were feeling a little bit stuck.
mm-hmm. in certain ways. And I don't want to spend this whole podcast talking about that because you have so much more magic to share. But I was wondering, what was going on for you back then, and how were you like relating to yourself and your creativity?
I think stuck is the word. I was stuck without the language and the clarity to really pinpoint why. I'd spent so long searching outwardly for kind of an answer as to how I was feeling. Typical, you know, high achiever, all the podcasts, all the books, all the study, everything else, to try and understand why I was feeling a bit off. And everything on paper was fine. And I think that was part of my frustration, is that I felt like I should be really grateful for everything that I had, but yet I knew there was more. And it got to the stage where I realized that I was the one that was getting in my own way of what could be, but I didn't know where to put all of that. Hence coming to you, because I knew that I couldn't keep journaling and trying to kind of internalize and work everything out for myself. I really needed somebody to help me walk through and work out, I think, what I wanted to kind of shed and let go of, and who I wanted to be and kind of step into. I felt like I was in a really messy middle transition bit, and I didn't have the language for it or anything else. So yeah, that's kind of how I was feeling when we first started.
And it's so interesting to me, because if I think about, like, generally speaking, a lot of my clients are like, I'm not going to say objectively more stuck, but they're like they're in corporate, or they're like really in the grit or struggling with something quite intense. You were in a position where actually, like, you were running a business with your partner. You had quite a lot of personal freedom. So it wasn't like, to your point, like objectively, it didn't feel like there was this huge thing that needed changing.
Yeah, exactly that. But yet, it was much more about the potential of what could be. And I know that a lot of what we explored and a lot of how you kind of phrase things, and I've learned so much from you, is around that becoming. And I did feel like the caterpillar who was like, you know, doing great, doing fine. As I said, everything was really great, you know, great partner, great house, great business, lots of stuff that was going really, really well. But yet I knew there was more, and I knew there was kind of an extra level of depth and impact that I could make if I could just untap that in myself and go a little deeper than it just being surface level. Oh, you know, Laura's great at this and everything's okay. So yeah, I think that's very well observed.
And I really resonate with what you shared about, like, there has to be more. And I've wondered at times, like, does this come as like a perfectionist thing? Because I sometimes question myself. I'm like, is this, like, there has to be more to this. And I see people that are just like, I'm just quite content with, like, just along and, like, doing the thing and going to Tesco's and buying supper and watching TV. And I'm like, I don't get it. Is this like a soul calling for me that there is more, which I think in part it really truly is. And also at times it can get wound up into my own perfectionism and pressure.
Yeah.
What comes up for you when I share that? Does that feel?
I relate a lot to that. I think that it's complicated, right? It's really nuanced, because we're told that we should be grateful for what we have and enjoy all the little moments and be present and, you know, observe and really hold on to all the things that are present for us. And yet, on the other hand, we've got so many, quote, experts and gurus telling us that we should be optimizing, doing more, being more all the time. So it's a really tricky place to be, particularly as somebody similar to you, where I have had, I'm kind of a recovering perfectionist, I would say, because I want things to be absolutely brilliant all the time. And that is a huge amount of pressure to put on yourself and those around you. And I think I've played in that space to work out the things that really, 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 really matter, that I really want to make sure are exceptional. So my client delivery, as an example, has to be outstanding, has to be exceptional in my eyes. Like, that is a non-negotiable for me. The time I devote to my friends and family, and that being an absolutely critical anchor And everything else, I'm like, okay, cool. It's just like window dressing. So I think you really helped me get clear on the stuff that was so important where I didn't want to compromise. But with all of that, I think there is the phrase that you used around there being like that soul searching or like soul hunger. I had a hunger in my soul. That's how I felt. I knew that I could be more. And that wasn't about being more impressive. It wasn't about ticking any more boxes or getting any more qualifications. It was more around that kind of impact piece. And I don't want to get all corny and use, you know, the words purpose and finding your why. But I didn't know what that was. It felt like that was missing. Yeah, definitely.
Totally. And I really, like, as you were talking, God, I could feel it like bursting out of my heart as well. Because and I've got tangled up with this through the years at various points, because I think I always had like an ache inside of me that was like, there's some, and I didn't really know what the ache was, but it was like, there has to be something more. And then I think I got trapped in this thing of like the gratitude trap,
yes.
Which is a bit like, it is a very beautiful practice to do gratitude work. And it's like incredibly important. And simultaneously, we can then kind of gaslight ourselves a bit, because we start going like, I should just be grateful for all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe me wanting more is just an egoic trap. Like, it's just a trap of me trying to like prove to the world that I am better than, or that I'm an achiever, or that I'm whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have that part of me in me. I 100% have the part of me that's like trying to prove myself to my family, whatever, that I work on. But simultaneously, there is a truth within me that is like, there feels to me like a very strong pull to, it's not even, I mean, I think self-actualization is too much of a strong term, but like to come into potential and to, yes, have impact. And that, yeah, those two things can coexist. Like, there can be a shadow representation of it, which is like, I need to be better than everyone else and prove that I'm amazing. And simultaneously, like, no, this really true soul pull that's like, there's something that I'm meant to be doing or experiencing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes to all of that. So, and I know what you mean. It feels, self-actualization feels very grand and kind of big, but yet there is this, the word that comes up for me as I'm hearing you talk there is like this search for meaning. And I've always talked a lot about impact and making an impact, but I think it's about, for me personally, I want my life to have meaning. I want to help others. I want to serve others, and I want to make the world a happier, better place, right? And I think that most human beings want that to a certain extent, but it's finding your way to create meaning, and to create meaning in the small stuff and the big stuff. Mm. I think where I fell into the trap, and I think that word is so valid, is that I was amazing at all the mindset stuff, right? All of the superficial level, changing the frame, changing the lens, you know, and convincing myself through those kind of processes, it's okay, it's fine, it's okay. And I did gaslight myself, absolutely, because what I didn't pay enough attention to was the different outcome that I wanted. I was so busy trying to be happy, grateful, and okay with where things are, and just reframing the heck out of it like an expert. And then thinking, no, there's something different that I want to create. I don't want to just put up with anymore. And I think you showed me how to really lean into understanding the signals, not just in my brain, but in my body as well, that I wanted to pay attention to, instead of just pushing stuff down. I was like, no, this is trying to tell me something. And I hadn't really done that before. I hadn't lent. I think I dulled my intuition an awful lot on that score.
And I think that I did exactly the same thing. And I still, it's like, I think it's a lifelong journey for me to be like really listening to my own cues. Cause to the point you made earlier about if you have some form of perfectionist tendencies, or like high achieving, good at learning, good at reading books and listening to podcasts and absorbing information, we rely so much on our brains, and it feels like our brains are the parts that are going to lead us. And like, we have to listen to our brains, but also recognize when our brains are telling us false stories and then reframe them. So it's like this constant game of like managing the mind, which is incredibly powerful and necessary. And simultaneously, for a long time in my own journey, I was ignoring so much of like to be honest, a signal that can't really be explained. And because it can't be explained by the mind, it's like, this is, has to be something wrong. Like, it has to be something wrong with me. Yeah. So I'm just going to keep reframing, because everything in my life is correct as per the like manual that I was given at birth of what life should look like. So therefore, this strange sensation I have of something being wrong must be something to ignore.
Yes. And that can be really othering as well, when it's like, hang on a second, I'm doing all the right things, but yet I still don't feel right. And I, do you know what? It's really funny. I thought I was very good at feeling, but I wasn't. I was definitely ignoring that, you know, intuition, those signals, those things that were coming up for me. And I was trying to intellectualize them. And I was getting stuck. I was going in loops in my brain and going around in circles, overthinking and trying to think my way out logically of a problem that was quite intangible. And you're right, it doesn't have necessarily language. It just is, and it is a feeling, but it's still worth paying attention to. So yeah, there's been, and I still practice that. I don't think that's a one and done thing. I think it is a practice.
Yeah, 100%, especially in a world where we're so focused on the mind. And if you're a good learner, and you've talked a lot about your love of learning and like wanting to absorb information, which is such a beautiful gift to have, and simultaneously at times it can pull us away from a deeper like soul truth or body truth. And I often have conversations with clients about this, that like, I have a lot of like quite smart clients that are like, what book should I read? Like, what? But I'm like, no, I want you to stop reading all books. Stop with the books.
Yes.
Like, if you could spend as much time sitting with your body as you do reading books, stuff would shift. But it's like, we feel safer in learning often. And I wonder with that, how has your relationship to like growth and learning evolved over the last few years? Because you've obviously been on a journey of like personal work for quite a while.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, do you know what? I think you've just led in beautifully with that, the kind of image of somebody running off to read a book because they're searching, and perhaps outsourcing their power a little. It's like, hey, someone else is going to have the answer to this. I mean, my bookshelf is heaving, right? It actually is. And I will always continue to love learning and reading, but it's coming from a different place now. I'm not looking for an answer or for a solution or to fix myself. I'm reading and enjoying, absorbing and consuming from a place of love and generosity, where I can then share those things. So it's more of a selfless quest now, I think. Whereas before, it really, I was absolutely searching. And because it's always been a tried and tested method for me, if I don't know something, okay, well, I'll go and learn it. Mm-hmm. It's a curse. It really is a curse, as well as being, you know, an incredible benefit. But it comes now, not all the time, but most of the time it comes from a place of love and from joy and from curiosity, instead of a bit of a panic of, okay, right, I've just read that this is now a new bestseller, this is going to have the answer. So yeah, it's complicated, but I give myself space for that now. I think before I felt like I was learning because I had to have an outcome, and now I'm enjoying that process, and then feeding back and, you know, mastering my craft and continuing to evolve. So it does, yeah, it feels like a shift in that way.
How do you in yourself tell the difference? Like, are there different signals that you can feel? Like, because I know that we all go into patterns, and I 100% do this at times where I start searching outside of myself. How do you notice in yourself whether you're trying to learn because of it coming from some place of void inside of you, versus like, oh, I'm just learning because this feels like it's of service to learn and share?
It's a great question. It is a feeling. And I think before I was very used to having a feeling of fear, a feeling of scarcity, a feeling of lack, a feeling of I must fill this, I must solve this. However, and I'm so attuned to it now because I've spent time, you know, thinking and learning about it, I can tell the difference. So it definitely is a signal. It's a physical, you know, am I moving towards something from a place of exploration and curiosity, versus oh God, I've got myself back here again. I'm trying to outsource. And it's funny, Lucy, as I'm talking, because I'm looking to write a book. Really exciting, thrilling. I know, I'm really excited. And I'm at the moment before, and now I've announced it, so hey, it's going to happen.
It's
now, okay, there we go, the accountability. Yet I'm caught right now in this spiral of, hey, there's lots of systems, there's lots of coaches, there's lots of different ways you can do it. And if I'm not careful, I know I will get stuck in the kind of motion trap of researching, learning, you know, James Clear talks about motion rather than action, and there's a big difference. And I know myself, I can feel it. I'm like, hang on a sec, Laura, you've Googled a little bit too long here. You don't need to go on another webinar. You need to start the goddamn book. So there's a lot of awareness, and I'm smiling and we're kind of chuckling, because I think I've really learned to laugh at those things as well, and to be like, oh, hang on a second, this is me doing that thing again. Instead of what would have happened before, I would have been very self-critical and really berating myself about it.
I resonate so deeply. The number of times I've I think it's a gift that I have, and simultaneously it's the thorn in my side, because I often will be like, okay, there is a problem, I need to fix it.
Yes.
Like I my general way of being is like, something is not right, I will go and find the solution, and I will do it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that we're both of us are kind of exploring human design to a certain degree, and like I'm a manifesting generator, so I'm like super fast running around, like million things at once, and like action. So I at times will find myself like, rather than sit in the discomfort of like, ooh, I'm about to start this project, and like, let me just sit with myself and my own wisdom and my own like knowing and see what wants to come through me around this, it's like, how can I find the solution the fastest possible?
Yes,
like,
I need it now.
Can you help me?
Yeah, yes, I need it now. That's so interesting. And I think that for me, having more of that action, so I'm a generator but not manifesting. So for me, I get frustrated because I'm sitting in that not knowing what step to take yet, and it takes me longer to get to that stage. So it's fascinating. But I think it's also so helpful, isn't it, to really know your tendencies, I guess, your tendencies and your traits. And I laugh now when I talk to my partner about it, because we're so open about the stuff that is, you know, working really great for us, and stuff that isn't working so great. So there can be a really valuable feedback loop where I can share and be like, oh, okay, I've got myself here again. And he's definitely more, he has more of a tendency towards taking action, probably too fast for me sometimes. I need to slow him down occasionally, but then equally well, I need speeding up sometimes. So, and there's also something that you said there I think is so valuable, and I'm continuing to learn this, is about actually asking for goddamn help, because I do feel a lot of the time I should fix or solve this by myself, particularly given the kind of the world that we are in and everything that we've learned and how we serve others. A lot of the time I'm like, I know that I should know this, I should be able to find this out. But often case, just the opportunity to share and talk through is still super helpful. And I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Oh, completely. It's like the hyper-independent thing. Sometimes I would have sat for like 3 hours trying to figure out how to make like some system linked to another system. I'm like, I could have just asked someone that had done this before.
Totally. Yeah, guilty. Absolutely.
And I want to talk, it was really interesting because you just mentioned then, as you were talking, this sense of like, when you're about to start a project and you're sitting almost in the not knowing, and you're like, okay, what action do I take here, and wanting to take the action before the thing is clear. And that feels to me, and this is my own definition and I'm really interested about yours, that feels to me like the messy middle. And I know so much of your work is around navigating the messy middle. And I wonder, I guess my first question is, how do you define within your business and your life what that messy middle actually is?
Oh, that's such a great question. It is that space and that gap between knowing you want something to change, but you might not know what the next step is, how things could change, the potential of what could be versus what is. And it's really confusing. It's discombobulating. It's like the in the corporate world, we would talk about it as being like, you know, in transition, or there's like a stage gate where you feel like one chapter is closed, but then you're not quite sure what that next step is. And I think that because we're all so different in how we create clarity for ourselves, how we find it, how we create it, how we source it, a lot of my clients are similar to where I was, in that stuck kind of, something has to change, but I don't know what. You know, I'm okay, but like, I know things could be better. And we kind of play detectives really to find out, okay, what is it? What are the traces of things that we can look for? What are the clues? And then we know where to direct our energy. So actually, you've just given me a bit of a light bulb, I suppose, because I allow people to slow down. There isn't that speed of like, right, we must solve this right away. And do you know what, Lucy? Sometimes we might not have a solution. Maybe it's a case of, do you know what? We've done some digging. We've had a look at this and we're okay. We actually are okay. We don't need to make a change, but it's having the opportunity to play in the mess and share freely and openly and dive deeper without feeling like you're going a bit mad. So that's kind of one view of the messy middle. And the other thing that I'm very passionate about is I work with a lot of women who are in what I would define as like the messy middle of life, you know, this kind of the mid 30s to mid 50s kind of phase. And that's not exclusive, by the way, but it's this not quite being the woman you were in your 20s and 30s. And then you're looking ahead and you're like, what do I want from the second half of my life? So there's a lot of uniqueness in that phase of life, I think, for women and for men, of course, but my quote unquote lived experience is as a woman. So it can feel very messy and discombobulating. Like every day there is chaos. And my philosophy on that is how we can get comfortable in that mess and be very selective about the things that we want to change versus the things that we're actually okay with. So it's as confusing as it sounds, because I think it is complex. It's not like a one size fits all, you know, solution to navigating this crazy journey we're all on.
And it, when you talked about the like that sense of like the almost the desperation to find an answer, and the like, I need to find this answer because I need to be taking action or moving forward somehow.
Yes.
I often use this analogy with clients that I think that we are kind of trained through various means, school, society, whatever else, that life is kind of a race. Not necessarily that you're like running the race, but that it is linear. Absolutely. And that you're like every step that you're taking, it might be a slower step, but you're still moving in one linear direction. And because we have such strong conditioning around that sense of it being straight line, when we're in spaces where we're not moving in that one direction and we're maybe moving left or right or like diagonally in a direction, or we're like spinning around, it can create so much anxiety because we have this sense it's like, but I'm meant to be on a trajectory. And yes. I love this video as well. It's Alan Watts talking, but they've turned it into a video, and I'm sure I've probably shared it with you at some point, this idea of life being a dance, not a race. Mm-hmm. And like how we're actually meant to be dancing through life, and we're meant to be like experiencing life in every moment rather than like constantly obsessing over the next step. But I think for so many of us, those spaces of void and those spaces of the messy middle are so uncomfortable because this obsession, like we have this sense of like, I have to be moving towards something at all times. And actually when I'm not moving towards something, what happens is I'm forced to sit with myself, and then all the grit starts to come up.
Yeah, unfortunately so. And no wonder we're terrified, because we're not in a world that, you know, really encourages that, allows that, permits that. I resonate an awful lot with that idea that we are kind of, it's as if life is this beautiful project plan and we are just supposed to be ticking off all of these milestones along the way. And for me, I found that incredibly unhelpful. And I'm, you know, I speak as a project manager. All of my corporate life I spent in a very structured way. And I found it quite difficult feeling very other, because I did not want to you know, tick the boxes and progress up. And probably because I don't think there is a right or wrong at all. And the way that many people choose to live their lives as that linear line, it's, I hate the fact that it's either a right or wrong. And I think the grey and the messiness and that muddle piece is where, genuinely where all the wisdom is. But we do need to be courageous enough to sit in it and to figure out the stuff that's working and the stuff that isn't. And it's funny, I don't think I've ever felt really, I don't really have a competitive streak externally, but with myself for sure, I have had a feeling of, am I where I want to be at this stage in life, right? That's come up a lot of like, hey, have I've chosen not to have children. So that took a long time and a lot of exploring. And again, if I look at friends and different decisions they're making, I think so much of this comes back down to just being comfortable with who you are and allowing yourself to really be who you are, and ignoring, certainly in my case, ignoring and kind of letting go of the shoulds that have come from other people, other environments, other pressures, not from me. So there was a lot of kind of cleansing going on in that fashion of just like, no, this isn't my story. You know, it's not my voice telling me this. It's like, it's somebody else's. And it's really hard to tell the difference, but it's worth paying attention to.
Honestly, like and sometimes I feel a bit embarrassed sharing this stuff because I'm like, God, I'm like, my brain tells me like, I'm meant to be the expert in this. Like, I'm meant to be the one that has it all figured out.
Of course, all the answers. Yeah. At all times.
And I was like deeply conditioned with achiever brain. And like, I was quite smart growing up. I did well at school. I did well at university. I got quite a high powered job, whatever. So I definitely had this sense of like, okay, there's the linear path of like, you're meant to go and become a managing director somewhere and make lots of money and have a nice big house and blah, 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 blah. And that is like, I've done a lot of work to decondition myself from that to a certain degree. And I think for me, moving to Mexico and then to Cape Town was actually really supportive of that because it took me out of my echo chamber. And I often talk to clients about this, like, yes, to a certain degree, you can't just like run away from everything and just be like, I'm going to run away. And it's easier to be far away from people. But I do think it's sometimes helpful when you're in a phase of transition or change to be in a different pot of honey. So yes, like you can become something different. But I've noticed coming back to London, which is so fascinating for me, because I really felt when I was in Cape Town, I was like, I have like birthed into this new version of me. I feel much more liberated, blah, blah, blah. Came back to London and I found myself getting back on the train of like, need to do the stuff, need to get a mortgage, need to blah, 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 and like all of these things in my head. And last night, like being totally honest with you, I got my period, so I was probably feeling seriously emotional at the time and still feel very sensitive, but was like lying in bed and was like, I just want to live a different life. Like, why am I doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And it was funny because like last week, Thomas had said to me, he was like, Lucy, like I'm a renegade. Like, I don't want to do all this like, this intense stuff. And I was like, no, but we should have a house and da da da. And then yesterday I was like, I don't even want any of this stuff I've been saying. I was like, oh God, my brain has gone back into the like, this is the road. And then you can feel it inside of yourself that something's dying and you're like, I don't even want this.
No.
And you have to keep checking yourself.
It's not your thing. Yeah, it's not your thing. And is that, I don't want to restrict it to such a simple kind of viewpoint, but is there an environmental piece there of being back in the UK? And I mean, you've been away for a long time, right? So is it kind of like, whoa, back into those feelings and vibes of that you had years ago?
Yeah, I don't want to say that it's like, it's the UK, because I recognize that the UK is a very diverse place and there are lots of people with different viewpoints. But I think the echo chamber that I exist within in the UK is quite high achieving. And high achieving in the traditional sense. So a lot more of my own insecurities around having made it or not made it start to come up. So I notice these old parts of me coming up about like having given up this path to, in inverted commas, having made it when I was in banking. And it was so fascinating because I was talking to my therapist about this the other day because it was becoming really uncomfortable in my body. And I was like, I don't understand why this is so painful. Like, I gave all of this up like 5 years ago. Why is it all coming up now? And we were talking about it, and she was like, it really is that you're being, having come back to the UK, in some ways, you're now being faced with the like true death of the, in inverted commas, high achiever, and like what the high achiever represented in terms of like, and actually the discomfort of having to face that inside of myself, and this like illusionary desire of like wanting to make it was, and still is, in all honesty, like it creates like a real knot inside of me that I'm like really having to like slowly work through.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing. I think that so many people will resonate with that, with that concept of like what does making it even really mean. And I think in your instance, when you were in that a very structured view of the world, like back in banking, and I've experienced that too, right, where it's you are quite literally climbing that ladder. It's as if you're playing a video game up to the level of made it, right? Yeah. And it's so, it is like, okay, well, where am I on that? How far have I got? And I'm not surprised. And again, love the UK. It's not about the UK. It's not about London. But I do think we value that a lot here. Mm-hmm. And other countries don't have, well, they place their value in other places. So yeah. I can totally get why it all comes rushing back. Mm. And I think it is that, back to that kind of self-actualization piece, which I know sounds really grand, but it's like, well, it's the version of success that is really true for you now versus all of that rubbish that you were kind of fed. Yeah. It's a really interesting place to be again. And again, messy. It's like, it's hard. It's messy. And I don't know about you. Like sometimes I feel like I've totally conquered this thing and then something will come back. I mean, and you've done a major thing by like moving country, but for me, it can be sometimes the littlest of things. And I'm like, hang on a second. I thought I'd done that. I thought I'd dealt with that. And nope, drag back again. And it's just that continuous practice and curiosity, I think.
It's like I've had so many hilarious reflections from various therapists over the last few months that like, I think sometimes, and this is actually a really beautiful link into like, I think what both of us find very important, like this desire to be real and not too polished about like what this work really means. And I think sometimes there's this idea that like, if you're living a like true self life, like you've given up all the conditioning and whatever, that somehow life becomes like only easeful and it's like only flowy and only whatever. And to a certain degree, I can see that that's true. Like my life definitely feels more easeful now than it used to. But I had the most hilarious reflection from our couple service of like probably like 2 months ago, that we were talking about like how this idea that we often fall in love with people that are familiar to us, like they're familiar to one of, they seem like one of our parents to a certain degree. Yeah. And I had this whole history of always falling for really unavailable men. And I then decided, I was like, I'm healed. I'm not doing that anymore. So I met my now wonderful partner, Thomas, who is extremely available to me and like really devoted. And our therapist, when I reflected that to her, she was like, oh God. I was like, what? She was like, you're one of those people that have tried to go the other way because you've healed your stuff. And now you're having to deal with all of the pain that comes up with choosing the more aligned path. And I was like, oh God.
Thanks. Thought I'd sorted that one.
Because it's like, well, if you choose the path of like conditioning, you're the ick inside of you and the grating inside of you is like, to, in my mind anyway, the soul pull that's yes. like, no, this isn't right. And if you choose the soul pull, you have the ick of the conditioning.
So it's massively. Do you know what? It reminds me of like, I'm very guilty of, or I certainly have been in the past, the kind of similar analogy of, it's the difference between knowing the theory and studying the hell out of the theory and putting it into practice. And I think it's very easy. I've certainly done this. I'm like, yep, that's sorted, but I've not actually embodied it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I've totally nailed that bit now. Or like, you know, I'm so great at having difficult conversations now. I'm just going to avoid them. But then when it comes up, you're like, oh, I actually have to do the thing, you know, like, and that reminds me, I'm oversimplifying slightly, but where you're at and making your choices in with your incredible partner now, it's like, oh, I actually have to like do the stuff now. It's not just I've moved through this. Oh yeah, I actually have to like live and like be different now. It's oh it's, hard. Like, it's hard.
Really, like the actual embodiment of like, oh God, this means like, I think there was some illusionary part of my brain that when I left banking was like, but like, I'll probably end up still having the life that means that I, in inverted commas, fit in with my family. And then being like, oh no, like I've chosen a different path. And like, obviously it's an illusion that I don't fit in with my family, but like the actual, all of the fear around attachment and belonging starts to really come up. And you're like, wow, I have to continue on this path, even though it's really uncomfortable. Yes. Because it's true. Yes. And that's not easy.
It's not easy. And I think the word illusion is so valid. And that's why whenever I talk about kind of embracing the mess, it is, you know, you said earlier, it's not about being happy and having everything under control at all times. That's not winning. And that's just, it's so laughable that we can even expect that to be the truth. So it's about, you know, the dance that you talked about and going with the waves and going with the seasons and appreciating that you will tolerate and be able to move through whatever's thrown at you. So that, I think that bit is the magic part, is like building that anchor of like, yeah, I've totally got this, you know, I've got this, whatever happens, because sure as hell, we can't control the completely unexpected. Yet we think we should, which is ridiculous. It's just crazy, right?
Totally. And I want to talk actually a little bit, because I know you mentioned this is important to you, and it's also really, really deeply important to me, this piece about being real, and like not being super polished all the time and like not falling into the trap of trying to perform, especially when leading an online business around personal development, which sometimes can come with this like idea of we need to have all of our shit together.
Yes.
What does that mean to you to be real? Like, why is it important?
Oh, Matt, it's everything to me. It is so, so important. And I know we wang on all the time about authenticity, and it's become a little bit of a cliche about, you know, be you and show up as you. However, I myself spent a long time shape-shifting and becoming a version of what I thought I should present to whoever I was speaking with. And it worked for me really well. You know, I got promotions, I did great stuff, I still built some brilliant relationships, but there was definitely a variability in terms of how I showed up, which then led to some questioning and some exhaustion, really. And I was noticing that I was, you know, doing the whole kind of putting masks on in different scenarios, bit of protection, you know, whatever else. And I had this piece about it was so important to me that everyone else's needs was met first. And then somehow I kind of picked up this idea that if I just stayed kind of quite compliant, brilliant, everyone else will be happy. And then I, you know, I just kind of get whatever scraps are left. And again, nothing was really wrong. Like, it wasn't making me desperately miserable or unhappy. I should be very clear about that. Yet I thought there's probably an easier way to do this. And I really think that I went through a process, not of this kind of crazy reinvention, but rediscovery of who I was when I was younger, like that sense of joy and that kind of the incredible, you know, the inner child that I have, and the child that I am so proud of everything that she did and everything that she accomplished and everything that she was, and kind of mix that in with this version of myself that I want to be and I know I'm capable and I also know the world needs. So I don't think it has been like this kind of crazy reinvention of like, right, I completely need to change and rip up everything about myself at all. It's been this loving piecing together of rediscovering kind of some of the light and fun and joy of who I always have been, really, and getting rid of like the layers of just unnecessary shoulds and performative stuff. And then beneath all of that, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I actually really quite like myself. And I do. And I my heart aches for so many people who can't say that, right? Because that's, I know that I'm in a fortunate position to be able to say that I like myself. But maybe deeper than that, I just accept myself. You know, there's stuff that I mess up all the time. I'm clumsy as hell. I could give you a huge list now of stuff where I am not good. You know, stuff goes wrong. I can't parallel park to save my life. And I'm, you know, whatever. There's all those sorts of things that before I used to think of like this collection of just like rubbish and bad things about myself. And now I'm like, no, it's just part of who I am. So I've let go of that and realized that it's again, sounds really cliche, but it's all of those imperfections, all of the flaws, all of the shadow side, all of that stuff that makes up the brilliance of me. And I'm so fed up with us all feeling like we have to be the best versions of ourselves all the time. It's just BS. No, be the truest version of you. Yes. Mm. But you don't have to be the best version of you all the time, because that's just not reality. That was a very long-winded answer. But yeah, you can say it's really important, that realness.
Yeah. And how did you, because you mentioned that there was a period of your life where, like, I'm making assumptions here, which isn't fair, but this perhaps sense of like not fully accepting yourself or seeing some parts of yourself and wishing they were different. Mm. What changed to get to where you are now?
Doing the work, right? Doing the work and looking internally and not looking everywhere else for an answer. Doing the work, and by that I mean coaching, personal development, digging deep, going inward. And also, like radical ownership of realizing that I have a choice. I have a choice. And if I am conscious and if I believe that I'm kind of getting in my own way, I have a responsibility to untangle that. And I think that is the truth for a lot of people, where, you know, we'll sit in that stuckness and the fineness and the mer kind of feeling. But hey, what do we want to do about it? And that is really annoying when you hold the mirror up and you're like, oh God, I have to do stuff. Like, can't someone else do it? Isn't it easier just to stay where I am? But it's also incredibly liberating and empowering to say, no, I can change this. Like, I can do something for myself. So yeah, I take ownership now. I take ownership of the good, bad, ugly, and everything else. And I'm okay with that. And to your point about presenting that to the world, whether it's online, on social media, or whatever else, I think it's my duty to do that, because if somebody does want to work with me, and if I'm privileged for someone to consider working with me, I want them to know what I am like. You know, it's really important that you're not met with like a completely different person to who is presented online. But I think for so many people, they feel they have to put that veneer on and that polished view of things. But that's just, yeah it's just not real life, is it?
No. No, and it's really interesting, as you were talking about, like, almost reclaiming the parts of yourself that you previously had been like, oh, I don't know if I am okay with this part of me. I find it so interesting in myself, because I think I often told the world, or like told myself, that I was a perfectionist, in part because being a perfectionist is maybe accepted. And like makes people think like, oh, look, you're really good because you're a perfectionist and you do things well. I will be totally honest. I'm really slapdash. Like, yeah. I'm extremely slapdash. Not with client work. With client work, I take that incredibly seriously. But like, I post stuff with typos in all the time. I don't edit podcasts. I just do shit. I'll like post a video not having really looked at it and then realize that like my bank card with the numbers on it are in the background. I am like extremely slapdash, and and my partner says it to me all the time, because he is like he's a designer, so he's like very meticulous about the way he does things.
Yeah.
I am like a whirlwind at times. Mm-hmm. And there has been a piece of like thinking that I needed to be different and that I should be more diligent and do things more properly.
Yeah.
And coming to a point of being like, that's actually not who I am. And yes, there is an edge for me around certain areas of my life being like, okay, slow down, Lucy, do it more properly. But coming to accept that like there's a beauty in that mess, in the same way that there's a beauty in all of the other stuff that we don't necessarily like about ourselves, and owning it can be really liberating.
I love that. I love that. And even that kind of question of, oh, I feel like I should do something. I feel like this isn't how I should be. Like, it's you. And I think that's where, and I'm sure you'll see this all the time with clients, it's like, yes, let's help people and show people how to change. But let's do it from a place of a real appreciation and an understanding for it. If it's not serving you right now, okay, cool, let's explore that. But if it's and I think this is why it takes such investigation, because do you know what? I feel the same. I used to think I was really organized all the time, that I had to have control over my plans, this, that, the other. I'm not. I'm amazing at going with the flow. I love going with the flow. I love a bit of spontaneity. And it's so funny, the stories that we tell ourselves of like that view of where we, yeah, of who we really think we are. And I love that you've embraced that, because it's brilliant.
And the thing that's also hilarious about it, because when you were talking about you reclaiming like the child parts of you and the joy and da-da-da, I see, and granted, I have only known you for a year and a half, so it may well have been that there was a whole period before then that you weren't in connection with it as much. But I often think like we can see the essence of someone, and there is a difference between who we present as in the world and like our own inner experience. Because when I have been in conversation with you, I have always seen you as someone that's like very light, very playful, like every human being has their own challenges, but the way your essence is like sunshine. And it's funny because I have had this whole story about myself for years, like probably since the day I was born, that I am boring. Like a deep thing of like, I'm so boring.
Really?
I'm so boring. I'm so serious. I'm so boring. And I'll talk to people about it. They're like, Lucy, you're like, like what? And part of that was because I was quite academic. So I wasn't like the one that was going, I never really liked going out drinking. That wasn't, apart from at uni where I had some, a period of my life where I drank way too much. But like, generally speaking, I was never like massive party goer. And I created this whole thing of me being boring, but I don't actually think that was how people saw me. But my internal world was like, everyone thinks I'm boring. And like, in all, it's kind of hilarious because I think that sense that I was boring drove me in part into this work, because I was searching for being interesting.
Oh, wow. That is so fascinating. And this is, it's so, isn't it interesting when, maybe this is the point about being real and showing up as you and sharing these kind of stories, because as soon as you said that, I was like, sorry, what now? Again, it's like the story that we tell ourselves is so often completely different from how people really view us. But it's funny how I think language matters, and language is so incredible as a tool, but it can also be really reductive if we stick to that, like, I am boring. And I have always thought I'm a really kind person. That's a lovely thing. But I've also thought that I am very clumsy. I am very, you know, so on and so forth. And I think whenever we're like, yeah, I'm always this or I'm always that, and that's, it's as if you can't ever move out of that space. Yeah. It's just, and I'm like, well, yeah, I am kind, but I'm also clever and I'm also frustrating in lots of manners. Like, I don't know, there's richness to the texture behind that. Yeah. And you are not boring. No way.
I have a friend of mine who, he does a lot of shadow work, and he always says to me, he's like, whenever we have stuff like that, like, it's like the way to heal it is go and be really boring. Like, go into it. Go and like do what you would think would be so extremely boring for a week.
Wow.
So that you can get comfortable with it. The same with like, I had this thing of like, I'm worried that people think I'm weird online. So I was saying to the ladies that I was on the treat with, I was like, right, I'm going to go on live on Instagram, and for 10 minutes, I'm just going to go, blah, 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 blah. And I did it. And I was like, this is really freeing, because I'm just this part of me that I'm so afraid that people will see of me.
Yeah.
I'm letting it be expressed. And to the point you made, I think there can be so much freedom in recognizing that we're a multitude of different parts. So when you were saying like, I can be clumsy and I can also be like organized and I can also be really joyful and I can also be like, that in itself creates a separation between true self, like soul essence, and all of the hats that we can put on.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that is multi-layered and rich and textured and beautiful. And I think that's what makes us all uniquely us, instead of that, instead of the labels that can be really unhelpful about us always being certain ways. And there's something that just came up for me where, oh, I'm not going to be able to follow that trace. I'll come back to it. I'm sure it'll come back.
I'm sure
it was obviously very important, but it was there. It was, there was a glimmer. It will come back.
It will come back if it needs to be shared. Always does. And I wonder now, as you are the queen of the messy middle, I would love to know, when you're in your own messy middle, when you're in one of those like void seasons, and I like to call, there's this song by Emily Sandé that I'm obsessed with, and I used to listen to it when I left JP Morgan, and it would make me bawl. And it was about like, it felt to me like the essence of it was like, when you're in this phase, if some part of you has died and you're not really sure what part of you is coming through, and you're in that space of messy middle, and the song's called Selah. And apparently that word is a word from the Torah, and someone can definitely correct me if I'm wrong here. But from what I understand, it means the pause, the sacred pause between verses. So a sense of like being in this pause between verses, which I just...
That is like, gorgeous. Oh, okay, I think I know that song, but I'd never dug deep into the meaning. That's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And I want to know, when you are in your seasons of messy middle or your Selah, what helps you hold yourself through that now?
I am much kinder to myself. I practice a lot of self-compassion in those moments rather than berating and that kind of inner critic coming up. And I get curious. I get curious without a load of judgment piled in. And I will give myself kind of space and time to explore, but not too much. And what I mean by that is, previously it was kind of endless long walks, endless journaling, trying to kind of work stuff out. But I think just being, you know, we've used this phrase before, but like being really comfortable in the uncomfortable and knowing that I can tolerate that and knowing that there will be some richness there. And sometimes nothing actually needs to change and nothing needs to be done. It's just having that moment to just reflect. I'm also just a huge fan, and I always will be, of having a coach, a co-pilot, somebody in your life to be able to talk and share things with, because in my experience, that untangling is so, it's so freaking valuable. Even if you untangle and it's like, nope, I'm all good, or if you untangle and it leads to something else, that incredible spa partner is invaluable. So yeah, all of those things, not necessarily at once, but yeah, many things.
Totally agree. Like the piece around like how easy we can get caught in the tangle of our own minds, and like having some form of mirror in our lives can be really helpful. And I will, in all honesty, like I've struggled with this to a certain degree, because I worry about the impact on our psyche and our capacity to connect. But I know a lot of people have been using ChatGPT for this purpose of like talking to ChatGPT. And I don't want to go into a whole long thing about AI, but I do think I've been trying to come to some point of like center around it for myself, of like what I really truly believe about using AI as a sparring partner.
Yeah.
And I think my conclusion with it is like, it can be a beautiful space for dumping brain stuff and having it summarize it. But what I have recognized in myself when I've like played around with it in a way that maybe people do, is there's a danger in it, because it's not actually a mirror. Like there's a slight, that I've noticed, there's a slight reconfirming of my own views when I use it. And I think that is the piece that I really hope that people, and this is not me saying that people shouldn't use it, because I know that not everyone has the financial capacity to hire someone like a human. Yeah. And it is beautiful in many ways as a sparring partner, but just to be aware of the potential for it reconfirming views that you have, which aren't actually true.
Yes, to all of that. I couldn't agree more. Really useful. I think it's another cool kind of tool in the toolkit, but it shouldn't be a replacement for the humanness. And likewise, when I've played around, I think there is a kind of colluding element that could be quite dangerous. So I think it's with anything. I think it's play with it. But it will, in my mind, never replace the power of doing this and the power of that human. You will think that you are seen, but you won't be really seen.
No. And it's such a, like, oh god, this could end up being a very long,
I know, another episode.
But it just,
yeah,
came, it just came up and I was like, I feel like I need to talk about it because it feels like I can see the benefit of it, but I agree with you that there's like an energetic connection that happens when humans are connecting. Yes. Like right now in this conversation, my heart feels expanded. Does my heart feel expanded when I talk to ChatGPT? No.
No, it won't. Beautifully put. I'm going to nab that because I've been writing a lot about it and sharing a lot with people because I think there is a concern around it becoming, yeah, around its usage and around the lack of humanness that could come from relying on, you know, yeah, a system and a tool.
And even like without talking to someone that you pay, like I can see how much of a slippery slope it is away from talking to friends.
Yes.
Because it's so, yes, it's just there straight away. And it's like that, to your point, it can make you feel like you're being seen and heard and like supported in the messy middle or supported in whatever you're going through. And I can see that is supportive if you're in crisis to a certain degree, but like true human connection is what heals. And like that's been said so many times, like if you look at any kind of therapeutic container, regardless of what the tools the person uses are, like regardless of any of that stuff, the stuff that actually matters is the quality of the relationship between therapist or coach and client.
Yes.
So it's like, what is the quality of the relationship between ChatGPT and you? It's like, I don't think there is a relationship.
No, there isn't. No, there isn't. And we can't change that. So no. Yeah, I agree with you. I do.
So I want to know, as we come towards the end, I've got two more questions for you.
Amazing.
For someone that's listening who feels stuck in like perfectionism, disconnected from their joy, feeling stuck in the messy middle, what is one gentle invitation that you'd give them?
I think I would come back to that piece around curiosity, and curiosity from a place of kindness instead of judgment and rushing and I must fix. I think the curiosity, I think if you're feeling that way and if you're thinking that way, it is your body and your mind trying to tell you something. So get curious. And that could start with some journal promptings. It could start with sharing with a friend. You don't need to kind of leap into solutionizing. But in my experience, those, the signals are something to pay attention to, rather than kind of push down.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And the question I ask everybody that comes on this podcast, in your mind, what does it mean to live a liberated life?
That is just such a great question. To show up as the truest version of yourself. I think all of our missions are to become the most you version of you.
I love that. Laura, it has been such a joy to have you.
Oh, such a pleasure.
It's been like the biggest gift this Friday morning to have this conversation. And I wonder if people would like to find you, find out about your work, where can they find you?
They can find me at LinkedIn. Instagram is coming, but at the moment LinkedIn is primary reference. So I'll give you the link to make sure that's kind of shared. And yeah, you'll find me Laura Wheatley. I'm on Infusion's website, lots of different places, but yeah, LinkedIn is the main place.
And if you ever want to smile, my wonderful listeners, go onto LinkedIn and find Laura's post, because every single one of them is her beaming into the camera with her amazing massive smile, and it's impossible to not feel happy when you see it. So if you need a pep up, go to LinkedIn and find Laura.
Oh, Lucy, this has been such a treat. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I've loved it.
Thank you so much, my love.